As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This is Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
We're in a fantastic time of the season in the National Hockey League, not just because of the playoff races, but with what is going on with the scoring race. The Hart Trophy. I have not seen and witnessed something like this in a really long time. I can't quite recall, but it's fun. And Vic, I don't know if you've recalled anything like this recently, but so many things are coming down to Game 82.
It's not in the salary cap era.
Right.
I remember outstanding things happening when I was a kid or as a teenager or even a little bit beyond that. But in the salary cap era, to have so many individuals doing some amazing things.
Like you're talking when Gordie Howe was playing.
No, you be quiet.
Oh, sorry, what? you set me up for that one.
maybe a little. Yeah. I was speaking more to like Mario Lemieux.
No, I know.
But in terms of salary cap era, for sure, to see what some individuals are accomplishing, to watch some of the scoring races come right down to the line, which we're certainly in store for. It is Thursday, April the 11th. So we have exactly a week left, a fat week, 8 days of games left. Yep. But it's going to wrap very, very, very quickly. Probably only one more podcast during the regular season, I would imagine, between you and I, before we launch into playoff talk. So so I think we should do a deep dive on the Kraken and the San Jose Sharks today.
Oh, yeah. No, the entire first segment is going to be because that is the biggest storyline going into Thursday. Forget about the Art Ross and all this type of stuff. Yeah. No. San Jose and Seattle. A lot at stake tonight in the plus-minus department.
Mm-hmm.
Pucks and Seven brought to you by DamonBarber.ca. Go to DamonBarber.ca for your chance to get 25% off all the great products. Just enter the code Pucks in Seven. We'll go west in a second. Let's go east. Again, Thursday night, tonight, you have Detroit playing Pittsburgh. You have Washington playing Buffalo. You have those three teams separated by 1 point for that second wildcard spot. It goes on and on and on. It is great for everybody except those three teams because they're stressed out, and I totally get it. But And also Philly, I did mention Philly in the mix because, well, Philly's a different story. But anyway, the Eastern Conference playoff race coming down to the wild card, the second wild card is going to come down to Game 82. Maybe.
It is. I now have to sit and watch hockey, not only with my laptop.
Yeah, you can't take a couple days off. Yeah.
But I'm now printing out all the teams that are playing each other instead of flipping back and forth between windows. I like to have the piece of paper and then I can check the standings and then check the scores. And I have my phone going and it's almost like a full-time job watching hockey now, not only because it is partially my job, but also just as a fan, there's just so many balls in the air when you're looking at, okay, the Devils are playing the Leafs tonight. So what does that doesn't mean as much for New Jersey anymore, obviously, but the Maple Leafs, there's some shuffling there. So if you're looking at the Eastern Atlantic division right now, this is something that we thought was relatively sorted a couple of weeks ago. And now we're looking at the Bruins, Panthers, and Maple Leafs in that order, all separated by 3 points between them. So when we were already conceding Boston, okay, that's done. And we're looking at Panthers and Maple Leafs for sure. It's just who's going to be at home, who's going to have home ice advantage, I should say. Instead of that, now Boston isn't safe either with holding down that first division. So now they're looking at a whole different situation. And it's the same thing. It's less of a thing in the Metropolitan Division, but there is still some shuffling between the Rangers and Hurricanes. And of course, the bigger race is who's going to clinch that third spot, now held by the Islanders, but could be held by the Capitals, could be held by the Penguins, could be held by the Red Wings, depending how it all works out in the final. And everybody has three or four games left now, besides Edmonton, but we're talking about the East. Everybody has only a handful, a very small handful left. So every single goal matters, every single point matters, every single loser point matters if you happen to get to overtime. So it's very exciting.
The divisional races, you talked about that, the Atlantic, and if the playoffs ended today, we've Florida against Toronto. And that leads me into the whole second and third place in each of the divisions and the discrepancy in one division specifically. So between Florida and Toronto in the Atlantic, there's 3 points. Mm-hmm. In the Central, Colorado, Winnipeg, there's only a 2-point gap. By the way, if Dallas wins tonight, then that does ensure a Colorado-Winnipeg first-round matchup. And then in the Pacific Division, you have a bit more of a discrepancy, 8 points between Edmonton and LA, 2 and 3. But in the Metro, Vic, Carolina and the Islanders separated by 20 points. I did some research into this. I went back to 2005-2006. In 2006-2007, there was a 29-point gap in one of the races between second and third. Last year, Toronto, I think they were up 13 points on Tampa. There was a big discrepancy there. But this whole 20-point thing to me, I mean, that's ridiculous in the Metro. They're a minus 21. In the Capitals, they're a minus 40. They haven't even improved in that, and yet they're still in a wild card stand.
And you're not, I don't think, whoever clinches that spot, whether it's the Islanders, the Islanders, the Capitals, the Penguins, or Red Wings, right, they're not going to complain about the point gap.
Oh, gosh,
they're not going to care. They're going to be happy the fact that they are in that position. They're going to end up playing a very difficult team, either the Rangers or the Hurricanes. It's the Hurricanes right now. But right now, these are all teams that we didn't necessarily even have in this race to start this season. For the most part, maybe the Islanders, not the Penguins, not the Capitals. Some people had the Red Wings, but they were, none of them were surefire bets.
No.
So whoever gets that is going to be generally happy to be there for a first round. We say it every year also, Ryan. Once you get into the playoffs,
anything can happen.
Anything can happen, and sometimes does.
But I will say, I'm going to guarantee this. If Carolina plays the Islanders, it's not going to happen. There's nothing that's going to happen. It could be a sweep. I'm just going to leave it at that.
I don't disagree with you, so hanging in the air.
Yeah. Penguins and Wings, they're still in this thing, and the big reason why the Penguins are is because of Sidney Crosby, who is, I'm not going to say turning back the clock, because every single season he's great. He's been doing this for a long time, 19 years, but this season has been remarkable, and he's carried this team back from not even the brink, from completely writing them off. I think we both did weeks ago.
We did.
To now all of a sudden with a chance to get in. He was voted, by the way, a poll was released on Wednesday. It was released yesterday. He was voted the most complete player in the NHL for a fifth straight season. I think that is so telling, Vic. He's a future Hall of Famer. You can go all through the accolades all you want, but when I see most complete player, I think that's a really neat thing.
It's a neat thing, not only in the sense of who he is physically as a player and what he brings to the ice every single night for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but also to the respect that he has garnered from around the league.
Right.
So the fact that his peers, I don't think there's any higher, you could be allotted any higher than by your peers, the people who are up against you every single night. The fans can think this, the management can think that, coaches can think this, but when your players respect you in that manner and so consistently, like you said, 5 years running. And he is a little bit older. He's not 27 anymore. He's not 22 anymore.
He looks like he's 27.
He still looks fantastic.
He looks really good.
I'm not saying I'm carding him at a bar, but kind of close to it. He does.
I don't know.
He does skincare routine and all of it. He looks amazing.
You put a hat backwards on him, a baseball cap, watch out.
Maybe.
I don't think you get through 19.
Maybe. So now let me put this to you. And I know you and I are on the same page here, but let's just put it out there anyway, because there are arguments to be made. And a lot of ex-players are saying this. This is not just Joe or Mary Blow on the street. That does he deserve Hart Trophy consideration? Because the points, the numbers necessarily aren't there. But in the sense that he has, as you said, brought a team that was not a playoff contender on anybody's list into contention this late in the season, essentially on his back, that is valuable. Does he deserve some conversation for MVP?
Before I answer that, where did Joe and Mary Blow come from?
The expression is Joe Blow, but also women have opinions too. That's what
I've never heard of that being a couple before. Anyway.
You don't know Joe and Mary? They're lovely people.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so here's the thing. MVP is the most valuable player to the team, and that's the Hart Trophy. Kucherov has been incredible. McKinnon's been incredible. McDavid's been McDavid. Matthews has been incredible, and I think he'll get 2 tonight, and he'll get to 70 by the time the season's done, but we can talk about that in just a bit. The only thing that is going to prevent Crosby from getting the MVP is because the numbers are not as good as Kucherov and McKinnon and McDavid. And it stinks because has he been the most valuable to a team? Yes, I think he's more valuable than Kucherov. Tampa would still be better. Tampa would still be better than Pittsburgh. I'm saying, take the two teams. They'd still be better than Pittsburgh if Kucherov wasn't lighting it up. Same thing with Colorado. They'd still be better than Pittsburgh. Edmonton'd still be better. So if you look at those four teams, Crosby is more valuable to the Penguins for what he is doing. What he's doing with this club.
Perhaps, but he's 19th in the scoring race. We do care about points.
He's not, the points are sexy, and Kucherov, McKinnon, McDavid, they deserve to be in that. Crosby does too. He won't get it, but still, I do think he should get at least one vote, maybe half a vote.
If you opened it up, I still don't have him in the top five, but if you opened it up to top 10, I'm there with you with the argument.
I think
but
top
right 10. Now,
yeah, because I.
Top 10.
So I'm going to take a guess that you have Kucherov, McKinnon, McDavid.
Just like everybody else on the planet, yes.
Right. And then you have Panarin.
Yes.
In the top five, and you have Matthews in the top five.
That's right. Okay. So, and again, David Pasternak's amazing.
Yep.
But the top fact 10. That Austin Matthews, particularly if he does get 70 right. goals, which yeah. is still entirely possible, the Leafs have four games left.
Yeah.
He needs to score an average of one in each. I'd like to see him get a pair a little earlier, maybe in the next couple of games, right. just to make it easier, I suppose, is the way to put
it's
it. Takes the pressure
already,
off for
it's going to happen tonight. I've already called it. It's going to happen tonight. He's
he
gonna
scores
get
two against New Jersey.
He'll get to 68.
Okay.
And then he'll have three games to go to get two.
And hopefully he doesn't just get one in those last three games. There's also a lot of discussion about should the Leafs rest him heading into the playoffs, which I think is a discussion that people are having for the sake of having a discussion.
Yeah,
because if he's nearing 70, he's going to be in there. He also feels fine.
Yeah, you can't rest the guy if he's so.
The East wraps up earlier than the West, so he's going to have some days off anyway before whoever the Leafs end up playing, probably the Panthers, but whoever they end up playing in the first round, he's going to get days off anyway. And again, I'm going to repeat this part because I think it's really important. He feels fine. And we've seen Austin Matthews when he hasn't felt fine. He feels good right now. Don't mess with it. So long as he doesn't get banged up badly in the next game or two, I don't think there's any discussion about that whatsoever.
One of the turning points, I think, for Toronto was when Morgan Rielly decided to take matters into his own hands with the empty net goal scored by Ottawa that game. I don't know. Something about the team changed. They've been physical lately. I'd love to see them play the Panthers because the last game they played, it was physical. It was a good hockey game.
It was a good hockey game.
Yeah, but we'll see. Matthews will be at 68 by the time the sun will rise tomorrow.
I like that prediction. I like that quite a bit. And so Nikita Kucherov, this is the big one for me heading into tonight. 96 assists.
Yeah.
We've already discussed that 100 assists is incredibly sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for four assists in one game, even though he has done it, I think that's a big ask. But if he gets two or three, that's going to be more exciting to watch down the stretch. The other part is we've just heard recently from Coach Knobloch in Edmonton because McDavid sat out the last game against Vegas. He's day-to-day. He's a bit banged up. But you know, I always want to call him Chuck Knobloch every single time. I want to say Chuck
Knobloch.
I'll
be honest with you.
Time.
That's come into my mind a bunch of times.
I've written it out in columns and my editor has caught it. Thank goodness I have a very good one because it's just, you know, ingrained in your brain. If you watch baseball, he was around forever and ever. So anyway, Chris Knobloch, he came out and he said today that McDavid is iffy for the next game because they do have a back-to-back set.
Yep.
But he's very optimistic he's going to come back. And he has 99 assists. So Ryan Payton, we could have two 100 assist performers this season. And that is nifty doodle to watch as well.
I'm sorry, it's what?
Just let me use my vocabulary and you use yours.
Yeah. Chuck Knobloch. Yeah, Victoria the Bride of Chucky. There you go. Always thinking about Chuck Knobloch. I do too. It would be, that's why I said off the top, what we're seeing today, right now, in the NHL with the scoring is unprecedented before. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see.
And you mentioned Panarin.
Yeah, what about, yeah. So
Let's give him a minute.
116 points in 79 games. 46 goals. The highest he's ever had before is 32, which is still very good. And that was only in 69 games with the Rangers in 1920. Not 1920. That would mean he's still playing at 100 and something years old. No, in 2019 and 2020. But he is 46 in 79, 116 points. Is he underappreciated?
I think so. And it's interesting because usually when players are underappreciated, it's because they play on the West Coast.
Yeah.
They play in a smaller market.
Yep, don't get to
New
see
York
them as much
is one
yet.
Of the largest markets, top three for sure in the NHL and sports in general. just, it is a massive market. Rangers have been around since the dawn of the league. So it's interesting the fact we don't talk about him so much with what he's accomplished right from the beginning of the season. He was my Hart Trophy candidate through October and November before other players started to do some things, because he was on that wicked point streak for ages and ages and ages. And he's another reason from the get-go the Rangers have enjoyed so much success this season so consistently from day one, why they're in such a good position. I think a lot of it comes down to his personality. He's just not the same boisterous personality on ice, off ice, as say a Nathan MacKinnon or a Connor McDavid, just with the attention he receives. I know Connor McDavid isn't necessarily personally boisterous, but he's always has opinions about things. He's talking to the media. And Panarin, you just don't, you don't hear from the guy.
He keeps very little of himself. Yeah. No, he does. He's fantastic, and he's very quietly, not very quietly, he's quietly gone about his business. And he's one of the huge reasons why the Rangers are a great team, but he's one of the huge reasons why this team is where they're at. And if MacKinnon wasn't having the season he was having, if McDavid, well, McDavid always does, MacKinnon does too, but if they weren't, Kucherov wasn't either, then Panarin would be certainly maybe 1-2 in the race when it comes for the Hart Trophy and the Art Ross. But anyway, he's like, he's been rising up the standings in the points race, like bread in the oven.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Bread man? Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
So let's go back to Peter Laviolette the other night. There was a game going on. And speaking of the Rangers, and in the game against the Islanders, Mika Zibanejad took a shoulder from Adam Pellick, and then Vinny Trocheck late in the game was hit from behind by Noah Dobson. So here is here's Peter Laviolette on that.
He came back at the end from that vicious hit. Yeah, he came back. That vicious shoulder elbow to the head. Watch it.
So you think it was intentional, that it wasn't a collision?
I do.
What about the Dobson?
Vicious from behind. Both.
I mean, he's certainly not pulling any punches, right?
No.
He had his opinion, and he was speaking specifically to the hit by Pellick on Zibanejad.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I did.
Did you see it from all the angles?
I did.
What did you think?
Nothing, Burger? No. I mean, not something you want to see, but I don't think there was complete intent and maliciousness involved.
First angle I saw it from, I thought, nope, that was just an accident, an unfortunate collision. Now, fortunately, Zibanejad is not terribly badly hurt, so that's really good. Thank goodness. Second angle I saw, and then I saw a third angle from a completely different camera that obviously a whole bunch of Rangers were piling all over on social media and going, look, 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 look. There is something to Adam Pellick being aware a few steps ahead of what was going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I am not in Pellick's brain, so I cannot for certain say anything that he was expecting to do this. And he didn't leave his feet. He didn't launch up into him. It didn't look intentional at all. There was something a little squirmy for me about it from that third angle.
So you're saying then he knew what was coming. He knew that the play was going to develop. He was not making it look intentional. That's what you're saying. It was just kind of one of those things. Let's make this look like it's an accident, but he knew exactly what.
And it was very much to me from that third angle. Oh, didn't see you there, Mika.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So and he knew where Zibanejad was.
And that's what I'm saying, yes. So okay. I can understand where Peter Laviolette is coming from. First of all, I can understand why he's incensed. Even Patrick Roy, the opposing coach, says, I sort of get it when you're hot under the collar in the moment, because this is one of your most important players.
Of course.
You're heading into the postseason.
Yeah, a really important time.
A really important player. You're going to be a little bit riled up. And also, you don't want to see anybody go down like that. And he did. He got knocked in the head. People were blaming Zibanejad for not looking at where he's going. I think there's something to that as well. I think there's
sure
something.
There is.
You have your own personal responsibility for being aware of what's happening around you on the ice, in addition to all of that. So am I fining the guy? No, I'm certainly not suspending him.
No.
Was it completely 100% innocent? Not necessarily either. But nothing to be done about it now, and thank goodness he's okay.
We were going to touch quickly on Matthews, but we did already. I think he, based on what he's been doing, I do believe that he will hit 70.
You think he does it, eh?
I do. And you know what it is, too? He's got a passion this season. I know he's a goal scorer, and that's what he does. He's been the best in the last number of seasons. But I just look at the last few games. When he got 60, the emotion from him was, I guess, if you and I got 60, we would be, oh, thank God. But there was something about the reaction. And then he went quiet, I think, for a game or two, and then now he's back to 66. I look at the work that he's putting in on every shift. And it's not just on the offense. He's not sitting there waiting for the puck to come to him to put it in. Oh, yeah, you know, here, Bertuzzi, Domi, whatever. They're making great pass, but he's working to get to the spot, to get the puck, and then get that in. So there's something different, and I think is important to him. Sure it is.
Of course
it is. Is it going to be the be-all and end-all of the season? No, it's not. But I do think there's something different about it, and he, to me, really wants this.
He does want it, and what's also interesting, adding to what you're just saying, his teammates want it for him.
Exactly. Yeah,
you listen to them now in post-game interviews, and you know they're going to feed him like crazy. They're already trying to the point that the entire market in Toronto really wants it. I was watching the panel on TSN the other night, and there was an opportunity when the opposition had the empty net. New Jersey had an empty net, and they didn't throw Matthews out there to get it. And they're like, what are you doing? Got a chance. Because now it would only be three. Like, if you're going to throw him out there, maybe he's a little tired. It doesn't matter. They have an empty net. Let's see how this goes. And that was a ripe opportunity for him to get a cheap one. We can call it a cheap one.
That's
because
fine.
There's no
That's
net
fine.
Binder. But they all count.
They all do.
And now you would only have three. So the market wants it. His teammates want it. The coaching staff wants it. He badly wants it. So I think that's definitely working. And you know he's going to be on the ice now for opportunities with empty nets going forward in the next four games, and so he should be.
I'm absolutely certain, even though I haven't looked this up, that all the greats that have scored 50, 60, 70, Gretzky with the 92, he had the 50 and 39, the last one was the empty net goal. I'm sure every single one of them had at least one empty netter, and there's nothing wrong with it. A goal is a goal, and 70 is just absolutely ridiculous. We'll take a break. We will go west after this. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Mattiash, brought to you by DamonBarber.ca.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Mattiash.
This is Pucks and Seven. I'm Victoria Mattiash, and that is Ryan Payton. And we proudly brought to you by Damon Barber Canada. Damon Barber Canada is all about elevating your grooming experience, from offering premium products to the commitment to quality. Damon Barber is a name that resonates with those who appreciate the finer things. So head over to DamonBarber.ca, use the code PUCKSIN7, 7 is a number, at checkout for an exclusive discount of 25% off of all their fantastic products.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, I listen, I'm like, that makes me want to go to the website.
Well, 25% is something. It's not like we're giving a 5%
or
10%.
No. And it's big. And I'll be, you know, for those, if they've never seen me before, I've got facial hair and I use those products. And
you do.
They're fantastic. Yeah. Really good. Well done. From east to west we go. The Vegas Golden Knights, we'll talk about them in just a second, but the standings-wise, because that's kind of where we begin with the playoff races, all that type of stuff. If Dallas wins tonight, the Stars clinch the Central. And actually, there was this funny stat going into the Knights' action. I wonder if I can find it. Anyway, if Dallas clinches tonight, then that would mean that we will see a Colorado-Winnipeg first-round matchup. So how about this? Dallas, Colorado, and Winnipeg will be the top three teams in the Central, yes. But all three can finish, at least for now, before the game tonight, can finish first, second, or third. And they all have six different potential first-round opponents. Each other, plus the Kings, Nashville, the Blues, and the Vegas Golden Knights.
Is this when we offer an apology to our listeners again, especially after the first tour through the East of just being headache-inducing?
Yeah, but
kids,
we're not doing...
bring out your notebooks. Do you have your pencils ready? Because this is here's the difference in the standings, but here's all the different permutations that could happen.
I think I summed it up, though, not like, oh, well, if they lose here, then they'll play so-and-so. If they win and they all that.
You did a beautiful job. It's just a complex situation.
Yeah,
it's a complex situation now.
Three spots,
The Stars, what's interesting though, you say the Stars, if the Stars win tonight, that's going to be the situation. But the Stars are playing the Jets and the Jets want more points. They want to move up the standings as well. So this is not, it's not like they're playing San Jose.
And then guess who the Jets play on Saturday?
No, it's not in front of me.
The Avalanche.
Okay, so.
And that may be a first round match.
It probably will be.
I think so too. Yeah.
I don't think the Stars tank to end this season, not the way that they've been playing. Also, they very badly want the top of that division because they don't want to play Colorado or Winnipeg either.
No, thank you.
You know, the Knights are going to be a treat or the Predators or whoever it ends up being. But at the same time, I think they'd like to steer away from Colorado in particular. So the Dallas, they're not taking their foot off the gas at all. But that, again, is a very, very big game on Thursday night for them to figure out, again, between them and the Jets, if that's going to be a set. We're still not going to know who's going to have home ice, if even that it turns out, but that's something that we can definitely look at.
Jake Ottinger has been great. Won his last eight starts.
And
eight straight wins.
I mean, talk about being vilified, too strong a word, but criticized throughout the season because he wasn't the Jake Ottinger we were becoming accustomed to last year and through the postseason. Yeah. He was wobbly. His numbers weren't great. And with the players he had in front of them, he should have been better. But it's nice to see them. We see players and teams trail off. Like, we've just watched the Flyers completely disintegrate in front of our own eyes.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see an individual player who improves and plays their best hockey at the time of the season when you want to see them play their best hockey.
Yeah.
And that's what's making the Stars right now an opponent you definitely don't want to face, not in the first round, but not even in the second.
No, and Jamie Benn's been resurgent from, and I think we talked about this
on the last podcast,
that line is just absolutely astonishing. Dallas, I mean, they're showing no signs of slowing down, and why not? If you still put the pedal down and go into round one on a high, then hopefully good things will happen for you. Edmonton will finish the 23-24 season in one of five ways. They'll finish first in the Pacific. They'll finish first in the Pacific and the West. They'll finish first in the Pacific and win the President's Trophy. That's a big ask. Or they'll come or they'll come second in the Pacific, or they will come third in the Pacific. So the worst they can do, standings-wise, is finish third in the Pacific. You and I have talked about this. Everyone's been following Edmonton all season because, when your buddy Chuck Knobloch was hired on. I'm kidding. when they made the coaching change in Edmonton, the season turned around for them, and they started winning games and games and games. And we thought, okay, are they going to track down Vegas? They did. They're going to track down the Kings. Yeah. How about Vancouver? They're in their sights right now. Did the Oilers catch the Canucks?
If you had asked me that a couple weeks ago, it would have been a different answer than it is now. But watching Vancouver stumble a little bit, they just lost the other night once more.
Yeah.
To Arizona.
Yeah.
So, and they haven't, they're 5-4-1 in their last 10, which isn't scary.
No.
In the slightest. And the Oilers are playing better. It's still the Canucks are not the same without the Smith. I think we all know that now for certain. And I'm not necessarily blaming whoever was Siloff's the other day in net. I'm not blaming the other netminders who are trying to do their best. I think it's also the way the team plays out in front of them. But the way that the Oilers are playing compared to the way the Canucks are playing, a 4-point difference when the Oilers have two games in hand.
Yeah.
Because they have five games left. Vancouver has only three. Yes. I do think the Oilers are going to finish atop
the
Pacific Division. I do, yes.
Vancouver, I may have said this to you last time, but Vancouver is the team that I least would fear going into round one of the playoffs. To me, they have not done anything special. They banked a ton of points. I think the record is better than that actual team. Look at what they've done or haven't done in the last number of games, dating back to the 25th of last month, which is not too far back. They lost 3-2 to the Kings, lost 3-1 to Dallas, then they beat the Ducks, so that's a big one, but they only beat them 3-2. And then you kick off the month, you lose 6-3 to Vegas, then you win 2-1 over Arizona, that's not a huge thing. Then you lose to the Kings, you beat Vegas by one, you lose in overtime to Arizona. Is that a first place team? You don't see the Rangers doing that. You don't see the Boston Bruins.
No, it doesn't.
You don't see
smell
Dallas
impressive.
Stars doing that.
It doesn't smell impressive at all.
No.
And I can imagine how frustrated Rick Tocchet is right now. And
I'm not trying to be critical, by the way. I'm not. It's just.
I think we are being a little bit critical, and I think we can be a little bit critical. The record speaks for itself.
Right.
Like, they're not winning the games they should be winning at the end of the season to put this thing away.
Right.
So I think that's fine. So, and you're even listening to Rick Tocchet after every single game, and he's very level. He's not losing his mind at all. He's not losing his temper, but you can see the strain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wouldn't blame them because right now they are the least scary. And I'm including whoever finishes in the wild card position. Right now it's Predators and Golden Knights. Uh-huh. I think it's probably going to be the Predators and the Kings or the Predators and the Golden Knights. And if Vancouver manages to hold on to that top spot, they're going to play somebody like the Kings, the Predators, or the Golden Knights. Yeah. I don't see them escaping that first round. And if they don't, if they fall a little bit, it's going to be a different situation as well. So, right? I don't, no matter what, they're going to play probably one of those teams.
Yes.
As it stands.
Yeah.
And I think especially the physical play, all three of those teams bring to the ice, and the defensive play that the mm-hmm. Kings bring to the ice, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a very tough out for the Canucks. But we'll see.
His name is Chris Knobloch. He told reporters,
you are not going to huh? let me, it serves me right for opening my big mouth.
Chucky. Chris Knobloch told reporters, the other day, Connor McDavid was not on the ice today at practice. Again, this is Thursday, the 11th of April. So he was not on the ice at practice. He did say that if it was a playoff game in the last game, then he would have played. So there's no real concern here for me. With this, I did see the injury happen. It was not a blatant one, but he tweaks whatever it is, he tweaks something. Don't force anything on him to come back. And the team's not going to do that. So he's day-to-day at the moment. I think that's fine. And Knobloch said, yeah, we're focusing on a game one right now of the playoffs against whoever that was.
He will come back.
He will.
And play one more regular season game at minimum.
To get the one assist,
not only, but also to shake a little bit of the rust off. I know we're talking about Connor McDavid, probably not necessary, but just to get back into the rhythm, I would have him back for one or two for sure. But yep. Does his health come first? There's no question of that. None.
Yeah. One of the additions that the Edmonton Oilers made, well, a couple of additions in the last couple of years, I guess. One of them is Evander Kane, and the other more recently, Corey Perry, after what happened in Chicago that didn't work out and all that type of stuff. They have been noticeably at each other. Perry has been noticeably at Kane. Perry's very vocal, and the cameras have picked up a lot of their discussions. And not just two with Kane and Perry, but Leon Draisaitl and Evander Kane as well. They've been going at it on the bench at times. So is there anything to make of this? Do you want to jump in here?
Corey Perry was asked post-game because there was quite a fight that the cameras caught between him and Evander Kane.
Verbal altercation.
It was not just a heated discussion. I think it was the next level up from that. And so Corey Perry was asked after that game, is there anything to this? And this was his response.
Brothers fight. It's just trying to bring out the best in everybody. We weren't playing our best hockey and, just frustration and emotions boil over. That's all.
How often would conversations like that happen and maybe the cameras don't catch? Because it did look like it was reasonably heated, but that isn't necessarily that uncommon.
It's not uncommon. I mean, you come in here, you probably see a little bit more, but cameras caught it and we moved on. We talked about it, apologized, and that's it.
I get it. I fight with coworkers. I don't think I scream at them, but I'm also not playing
a physical... You've screamed at me a few times.
I have not. That is not true. That is not true. I raise my voice on occasion.
That's true.
No. But they're in the heat of the moment. This all really matters. I think we can recognize they're a little bit temperamental, both of those mm-hmm. players. Mm-hmm. They've both been around the block a couple of times. And for him to say, brothers fight, that's the end of it. It's no big deal. I will buy the fact that it's no big deal because the game that they followed that up with was a beatdown of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Right. Yeah.
So if there were bad feelings that were really bleeding into it, yep. It certainly didn't manifest itself on the ice in a game that mattered very much to follow up.
I will say this about Evander Kane.
Okay, go ahead.
A lot of quote unquote things follow him around to the places that he's been at. I don't want this to become an issue for Edmonton, a distraction, whatever it is. And yeah, Corey Perry saying, oh, it's fine, whatever it is, it's just emotions and all that type of thing. But I just think that with Evander Kane, this stuff does happen. He's a great player. He is. And I don't think we've seen the best from him in a very long time. I don't think he's completely happy to play in the... I don't know. I don't I think there's more to this than meets the eye, and I don't want this to become an issue in the room for Edmonton when they take on whoever in game one.
I think there's enough leadership in that room to prevent that from happening.
There is, but at the same time, it's Evander Kane. He goes to the beat
everything
of his own
you
drum.
Say about him is true. The fact that we have talked about Evander Kane as being more of a distraction throughout his career, considering what a great player he is when he just plays hockey. That's the most diplomatic way that I'm going to, because I could probably do a whole segment on that. Yeah. We're not going to. I think there's enough leadership in that room. Leon Draisaitl is not going to put up with this nonsense.
No, and I do too. I just, it's, he again, marches to the beat of his own drum. Great player, but Evander Kane is Evander Kane. Nate McKinnon is Nate McKinnon.
Yeah.
Everybody knows how I feel about Nate McKinnon who's heard this podcast.
You love him. It's okay.
I mean, just.
It's a beautiful thing.
Dreamy. Dreamy.
He is a pretty dreamy player. I'll give you that. Yeah.
So we have seen, we've been around hockey a long time, you and I. We've seen, I mean, you're dating back to the, you know, Davy Keon days and Maurice Richard. And I mean, not that long. No, I'm kidding. We've been the Lemieux, the Gretzky's, Eric Lindros, all these great players. Now we see McDavid and the Matthews, Panarin, and I can go on and on and on. We've seen a ton of goals from these incredible hockey players, these superstars. The three that he scored the other night against Minnesota were three of the greatest I've ever seen in my life. People will think, hold on a second here. Did he deke out the whole team? No. Did he put, I don't know, put a bow on, just make an incredible play that you just, oh, no, maybe not. But the fact is, all three of them, gave him 51, by the way, over 50. And all three of them were pretty much the same, but they were different. The speed, the execution, the finish, it's like watching music. It's like a symphony. I'm going to go on and on about McKinnon.
To me, he's a truck with finesse.
Okay, you know what? That's great. That's really good. And I'll say this. I think he's faster than McDavid. I think he's a faster skater than McDavid.
Full out? No. Burst-wise? And you're the one who first showed me the light with that.
Burst, he is? You don't think full out?
If you have them on the frozen canal and they can just go, Connor McDavid wins that race.
Really?
I think so.
Hmm.
But McKinnon may get off to the stronger start.
What if McKinnon pulled like a Tonya Harding or something and did something to like
it's a whole different narrative,
Kerrigan.
Ryan. One of them pretends to pull up like the
Michael Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going for. I know. And can we just we're splitting hairs here, like under a microscope. Can we just say they're both fantastic? But you're right. Yeah. McKinnon's those three goals the other night in particular were beauties to watch. Again, a truck with finesse. That's how I'm going to put it. And he's been like that all season long. He is going to be fun to watch through the postseason. I will also point out, because you know Kucherov is my guy for the heart and has been for months and months now. Yep. That same night, the assists that Kucherov provided for his team in the Lightning's game, I call him a magician all the time because he is. And his vision, I know we talk about it ad nauseum. People are going to get so tired of it, but I can't stop. He makes a play that works out seconds later, which is a long time in hockey. Yep. Like his sense of anticipation of where somebody's going to be to pick up what he's doing. And his teammates all say that all the time. To actually look at it, though, he is so smart. My goodness. So it's almost like you're having this, we're not having an argument at all, but just comparing two players that do things rather differently, but are both amazing in their own right. And you can't almost compare them because they are different players, right?
He's like a Bentley with finesse.
There you go.
Kind of keeping with
and
the car,
a very smart chip in the engine.
Oh, there you go. Fantastic. It's fun. So quick thing with the Avalanche, and then we'll move on to Arizona, unfortunately, because it's Arizona. Alexander Georgiev leads the NHL in wins. His goals against is below 9. The save percentage is 30. Save percentage is below 9. Goals against is 31st best in the National Hockey League. Is there any concern going into the postseason and hopefully the Avalanche's run about the goaltending? Because he has been fine. He's not been lights out. But because the Avs are so good, he hasn't had to be great.
We've already seen that narrative unfold with other goaltenders. Philip Grubauer is one of them. That has been good enough for a very good Colorado team in the past. They've been able to win with not the best, most, not a Vasilevsky, not a Hellebuck, not a Shesterkin. They've been able to do that. So I'm going to say yes. I'm also going to put a little bit of cherry on that by saying that I actually have faith in Eustace Annenen. The kid that they brought up has been pretty much perfect the entire time, to the point that there was a lot of talk about Colorado pursuing a goaltender before the trade deadline, and then they didn't. Because this kid came up, they liked the looks of him. Here's a future of Colorado's net. And when he's been called upon, he hasn't faced the hardest teams, but he did the other night. He won against Minnesota. I mean, he's capable as well. So there's one of those you can catch lightning in a bottle with this young kid if necessary, if there is a little bit of a wobble. But my top answer to this is the Avalanche are strong enough on their own to manage well enough without a superstar.
Yeah. Best place to catch lightning in a bottle is Tampa Bay.
Yeah, but they don't need to. They've got Vasilevsky.
So. You completely missed that, did you? Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, yes,
carry on. So this never ends with the Arizona Coyotes. We have certain things to talk about that. Just paraphrasing everything that's gone on. The NHL is looking at two different versions of a league schedule for 24-25. One's with Arizona in Arizona, and the other is with the Coyotes franchise playing in Salt Lake City. I do know that Salt Lake City will be getting a team at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a couple teams in the near future. There could be four more by the time 2030. It's whatever. Anyway, expansion, relocation, whatever it is coming. It's around the corner. It's going to cost a lot, but that's what it is. I am so tired, and I feel for, by the way, you were just in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for the fans of the Coyotes, those that do go to games, those that do want the team to stay. It just never ends. It never ends
for a whole host of different reasons. I will say this. I'm not very much enjoying the last couple of days that other markets, including Toronto, are almost celebrating the fact that this team very likely could be moved in the next couple of months. The problem right now is they're looking at having this hammered out. It sounds like May.
Yeah.
Whereas the Coyotes owner can't bid on the land they need for a new arena until the bidding opens up in June. Yeah. So the calendar is not working in the current ownership's favor. Now, there's a whole other bunch of moving parts with this. Again, we would have to devote half an hour to this topic. But in general, the timing doesn't suit Arizona. I would have liked to see what would have happened had they successfully built on that land and put together some plans to finally keep this team once and for all. Because I do feel sorry for the fan base. Anybody who has ever lost a beloved team in their hometown knows what it feels like.
Yeah.
And it is yucky. I spoke to a lot of them. They're tired. They're done. Whereas the rest of the league almost seems to be like, thank goodness this is coming to an end, which feels a little heartless to me because these are real fans who actually do genuinely care about their team.
It is.
Now, if it does get finally sorted out, we also know that Bettman, with his dying breath, is not going to give up.
Nope.
On having an NHL franchise in Arizona.
Because they would have moved years ago.
The market's too big.
Exactly.
And it's growing all the time.
The NHL is adamant. I'm with you. He will not budge unless his back is completely up against the wall.
So if they're going to then put a new team in Arizona in the next few years, which sounds like it's some sort of, Dave Pignota talks about it. One of your partners on the Hot Stove talks about this all the time, and he has the insight to it.
Yeah.
So I know he knows
that
this is always going to be a plan. Yeah. So what I do hope, if they do get moved to Salt Lake City, and it sounds like it's not definitely moving in that direction, but very possibly could be moving in that direction. If that's going to happen, I want them to wait the 3-4 years to get this hammered out. Get this land.
Yeah.
Build this gosh darned arena. I'm watching my language for you in particular, Ryan. Get this done and get all your ducks in a row and then get more ducks in a row. And make sure this is the last time that this fan base, but also the rest of the league, is going through this. It has to be a permanent solution.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. The last time that anyone has to go through all this. It just, again, it's the never-ending story. And every time, I'll be honest, every time I see the Coyotes come up in a news feed that has nothing to do with the night before, the night of, that they're going to play, I know what's coming. Oh, it has to have something to do with relocation. It has to have something to do with them moving. It has to have something to do with them trying to find a different spot in Arizona. It's frustrating.
It's frustrating for everybody, but it's particularly frustrating for the people who have fallen in love with this team. It makes me sad.
Joel Quenneville.
Very quickly on this, because I don't want to give this too much time.
You go ahead. You set up.
So we heard from Joel Quenneville for the first time since he lost his job. He was a member of the Florida Panthers at the time, but because it was a fallout from the massive mistreatment of Kyle Beach, well, the criminal mistreatment of Kyle
Beach,
way back when, and everybody's mishandling it. And Joel Quenneville, of course, was the head coach at the time, so he was somebody who also lost their position in hockey, was pushed out of the league. He spoke out for the first time. We're talking not quite 2 years. But, you know, it's been a while. And full credit to the Cam and Strick podcast, because the interview was not given to the NHL at large. It was on the Cam and Strick podcast. If you have any interest in this, please go there and listen to it. I'm going to give you a quick summary. He basically took responsibility on his own accord, said, I did not ask enough questions about what was going on in the time. I did not do my due diligence in following up to make sure all of my players, even if in the minors, were not, you know, being taken care of properly. And there wasn't. He admits he definitely dropped the ball in the situation, which is exactly what you need to say. He's not saying, I still didn't know. He didn't. He took ownership of it, which was very necessary. Just pointing this out because this might be a first step to regaining a position, a toehold in the NHL as a coach as early as next season.
That's fine, but why didn't he take ownership and come out with this months ago?
I don't have an answer to that. I do wonder, and I don't have any insight here. I wonder if the league had something to do with that.
Okay. Joel Quenneville, again, one of the most recognized coaches in NHL history. I do agree with you. I think maybe there's something to this, that he wants to get back in the league, all that type of thing. I certainly would not, if I was an owner of a team, I would not have Joel Quenneville enter my discussion whatsoever. I don't believe in that type of thing. But yes, he said what he did. Fine. Move on. Again, Kyle Beach, no, it's that was tough. Last one before we wrap up. Shane Wright, since he's been, remember him? Remember the first round draft pick?
Who wasn't a first round draft pick when when it was all said and done?
Right.
I love this story. I love this story because a lot of people would already say that Shane Wright at age nothing has already proven to be a disappointment. He was supposed to go first overall. He fell down the draft. Seattle eventually took him after a whole bunch of other teams passed on him. This is, of course, a couple of years ago. And now, last year, played a little bit with Seattle, didn't go particularly well. He's played most of this year in with their minor league affiliate. He has played well. Seattle's well out of it now, and they brought him back up. And I really like the way that they've handled this situation. Instead of burying on the fourth line, which they did last year, whenever they gave him an earlier opportunity, 8 minutes a game, playing with these other, playing a different role altogether, basically. They tossed him on the first line with Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz. And lo and behold, in four games, he has 4 goals and an assist.
Helps
and
who you play against, play with.
It's certainly going to help. But the fact that he gained more seasoning in the minor leagues, gained more experience playing against men, which I think was incredibly valuable. He didn't have to play in juniors anymore.
He doesn't turn 21 until 2025.
Seriously? I didn't think he was that young, but there was a discussion about whether he had to go back to junior, but they made the exception. He was able to play in the minor leagues. I think that was key to his development. So now you're playing against competitive grown-ups, which is important. And look at that. He's taken the ball and he's run with it. And I love seeing this. And now we can look forward. He's going to continue to play in the AHL postseason because his team's in the playoffs. And then we can look forward to what he does next season after all of this extra experience.
Yeah.
And maybe you tuck him in the top six and maybe he goes on to have an excellent, not just decent, but an excellent NHL career.
And good on him too, because the mental fortitude that he's needed
huge
is massive. So I'm glad Seattle's given him a chance. Yeah, he was born January 5th, 2004. So he'll be 21 January 5th, 2025.
That's still a kid. That's bananas. You're still a kid. And people who are already writing him off.
No, I know. Absolutely.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's really, and we've seen first round draft picks be bust. We've seen top 10 draft picks be bust.
Of course
over time.
We have.
Totally get it. But what I like, and I don't know this, but I'm sure that he has good people around him. And that's such a key thing in this day and age of sports. You need to have that mental strength, not just you, but around you as well. Especially with, he's got talent. There's absolutely no denying that he's got talent. Just give him a chance. Give him a chance, and that's what Seattle's doing, which is good. So hopefully he'll crack the opening lineup next year.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Took you a while.
That one was
good.
I wasn't expecting it.
Because I know you weren't. Save for the end. We're going to get back at this some point because, again, the next few days is going to be ridiculous. And coming up, what, a week today is the last night of the NHL regular season. Then the postseason gets underway. Going to be a lot of fun. Everyone says the first round of the NHL playoffs is the best first round in sports. I tend to agree with that. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter at Ryan M. Payne, not Victoria Matiash. Also on Instagram at PatesRP and Matiash Victoria. And wherever you get your podcasts, you can catch us. And we're presented by DamonBarber.ca. Log on to DamonBarber.ca now, enter Pucks and Seven, and get 25% off their fantastic products. Talk to you next time.
Pucks and Seven, brought to you by DamonBarber.ca. Available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.